The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
We've already previewed the 16 Thursday NCAA tournament games for you in part one of this special double edition of Vegas Sports Day. Now, it's time to shift our attention to Friday. So, let's go to Greensboro, North Carolina. Take a look at the lines right now for the four games in Greensboro. We have Duke, -12.5 over Lehigh. Notre Dame, -2.5 over Xavier. No line, of course, for North Carolina because we don't know who they're going to play in the first round just yet. And Alabama's taking a little bit of money. They're 1.5 favorites over Creighton. Let's start with this Duke and Lehigh matchup. You know, it's a semi-home game for Duke. They'll enjoy enormous crowd support in this venue, but the Blue Devils still without one of their key cogs. Ryan Kelly hasn't practiced this week, didn't play last week, certainly hurt Duke in the ACC tournament, and will definitely hurt them here. Well, maybe not in this matchup, but they'll hurt them in their NCAA tournament chances if Ryan Kelly doesn't get healthy in a hurry.
You're going to see a lot of blue being worn in Greensboro, just not all the same shade. North Carolina fans and Duke fans competing for the extra tickets that are going to be available here. Lehigh, an interesting team, fundamentally sound. They got a big-time player, C.J. McCollum. We're talking about 21.9 points, 6.5 rebounds, and 3.5 assists. Reason they're interesting here, Duke is not going to out-athlete Lehigh. They're not that much bigger. They're not quicker. They're not necessarily deep. Duke's got excellent perimeter shooters, and the question here is, can Lehigh get as far out as the Duke shooters go? Curry, Rivers, these guys can shoot several feet behind that line. That's going to be the big Lehigh issue. But they're not going to get whipped on the boards that badly. They're not going to get beat that badly in transition. Lehigh's got a chance to hang around this for a long time, but the oddsmakers also did their job. It's the type of game a couple years ago you would have got a 14 or a 15 on. They set this number pretty sharp.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the 12.5 tells you what you need to know about Lehigh's ability to compete compared to some of the other 15-2 matchups or 16-1 matchups. This is not one of the biggest point spreads on the board. It speaks volumes about the one great athlete that Lehigh has. It also speaks volumes about the fact that Duke, not one of Coach K's best defensive teams by any stretch of the imagination in recent years. Duke's been, obviously, the way you win national championships is on both ends of the court. This year's Duke team, when it comes to getting stops, well, that wasn't their specialty. In this point spread range, you need stops on the defensive end every bit as much as you need points scored on the offense.
Take a look at Notre Dame Xavier, and we've sort of heard a recurring theme all week. Xavier never got their swagger back after the Cincinnati fiasco. But you know what? What if they were never all that good to begin with? One of the reasons why people thought Xavier was special before the Cincinnati game, hey, you beat Butler, you beat Purdue. Well, those wins didn't turn out to mean as much as they did at the time, and they had to rally to win against Vanderbilt and OT. That was a pretty good win. The others really weren't. Maybe this team wasn't quite all that, but what was supposed to be a good, strong, veteran team was a team that just sort of had their leadership wallow out there. Two Holloway, good year, not a great year. Mark Lyon, mediocre year, not even a good year. Kenny Freese, not really much better now than he was 2 years ago as a sophomore. Xavier did not develop as the season went on. And when you play a team like Notre Dame, when it comes down to mental toughness, possession by possession basketball, you wonder if maybe Xavier just might blink a couple of times through their concentration lapses, maybe struggle a little bit.
Well, I don't want to sell Xavier short for what they accomplished during the season. Okay, the win at Butler didn't mean as much as we thought it would, or the win against Purdue when the Boilermakers were struggling. But when you go into Vandy and beat the Commodores and shut them down defensively, you need to have the capacity. And let's not forget, the game that spoiled Xavier's season wasn't just a win. It was a complete shutdown, dominating performance against the Cincinnati team that went all the way to the Big East tournament championship game. Xavier's A game, the potential's there, but as we saw, you know, the 8-0 start, 13-12 straight up finish. They didn't play good basketball down the stretch. They didn't play good basketball in the conference tournament, and that really concerns me here against Notre Dame. Now, the Fighting Irish, they were overachievers this year. To the talent level at hand, I give Mike Bray all kinds of credit. Bray's system, which is slow it down, play tenacious defense, force opponents to guard you for 30 seconds on every possession. That's a way to win games in a Big East conference that has better, where most teams have better players and better talent than Notre Dame brings to the equation. But maybe we've seen the Fighting Irish get as much as they can get out of that system. As you mentioned, Dave, they close out the season 2-3 straight up, 1-4 ATS. Notre Dame, like Xavier, didn't play their best ball when it mattered most.
Won't see a line for North Carolina for a while. They're going to have the Lamar-Vermont winner. Both are difficult matchups, though, for those other teams because of that Carolina size around the basket. We expect to see John Henson back on the court this week. But Henson and Zeller, as good as they are in tandem, at their level, can just be so dominating against teams that don't have that size. Because not only are those guys so big, they run the floor awfully, awfully well. Very rare that you ever find a team with two kids, 6'10 or taller, that run the court as well as these two do. Look for Carolina to have a pretty easy time of it, regardless of which opponent they're up against.
And next up, we have maybe the classic contrast game of the entire first round. You have Alabama versus Creighton. The point spread says it's going to be close. Actually, open to pick them. We've seen the money come on Alabama. And these are two teams, they're not mirror images, they're exact opposites of one another. Creighton, an extraordinary offensive ball club. Really, you watch that team's offensive flow, brilliant. Game in, game out. Number one in the nation in field goal shooting percentage offense. Number three in three-point shooting percentage. Good inside-outside balance. They're number two in the country in assists per game. The ball movement there, outstanding. And, of course, number seven in assist-to-turnover ratio. They're a really good offensive team. Alabama? No. They're number 331 in three-pointers. Not a good offensive team. An ugly offensive team. From anytime you watch them, doesn't matter if they're facing weaker foes, that offensive flow, it's nails on a chalkboard. It's is a expression that Dave uses a lot. And Alabama's offense can be like that. But as much as Creighton has the offensive advantage here, Dave, boy, this Bama team's got a pretty strong defensive edge when you look at the numbers.
One of the best in the country, because they will guard you the entire length of the floor. And that's a fascinating matchup element. How will Creighton react against a good, tough, physical defense? Because these Creighton numbers almost give you sort of an Ivy League type of feel. They run good stuff. They make their shots. The problem is, at the other end of the court, Ivy League athleticism. Now, you remember all those good offensive numbers Teddy told you about Creighton? Let's shift over to defense. Number 212 in field goal percentage, 236 in three-point percentage, 290th in block shots, and almost all the way at the bottom of Division I, 321st in steals. Opponents only had 344 turnovers in 33 games, 10.5 turnovers per game. That's awfully, awfully bad. So it shows you what type of team Creighton is. Smart, fundamentally sound. They'll run good stuff. But Alabama, they're going to bring athletes. If that Bama defense takes Creighton out of their flow, Bama won't have to shoot that well. They're going to get easy baskets themselves around the hole.
I don't expect to have action on that game, Dave. You looking at that Bama-Creighton game as being a realistic betting possibility for you, for your portfolio?
It's the type that we like. We like the Alabamas in matchups like this one. Because, again, they're used to having to work for their baskets, which you had to do in a Southeast Conference. The SEC was a good defensive league this year. They're going to get some easier looks against Creighton because they're going to be able to take the ball right to the basket against them. Once again, we theme from earlier in yesterday's show, we don't like teams in pick 'em games that don't D up at crunch time. Creighton doesn't.
Let's shift over to Friday in Columbus. We have another set of four games to talk about. Michigan State minus 20 over Long Island University / Brooklyn. Memphis minus 3.5 over St. Louis in the single most outrageous 8-9 matchup that I've seen in recent years, considering the RPI numbers for these two teams. Georgetown minus 3.5 over Belmont. That's one game that Dave and I'm certain are going to disagree about. And NC State minus 2.5 over San Diego State and Steve Fisher's Aztecs.
First one's going to be ugly. Long Island loves to run. They just don't do it very well. In their own level, they can score a lot of points. Remember, first-round game against Carolina last year, they covered the spread. They lost 102 to 87. Now it's a different team. Michigan State is tough. Michigan State is tenacious. Michigan State is smart. But look at some of these aspects inside of Long Island. 330th in the nation in scoring defense. Only a small handful of teams are below that. 241st in field goal percentage defense. But how about 322nd in turnovers per game, 299 in turnover margin? If you've got a young child and you think he's going to become a good basketball player, don't let him watch this team. This team will probably play the worst fundamental basketball you're going to see in this round. That's the wrong thing to do against Michigan State.
Yeah, and we talked about Tom Izzo's tournament track record going into the Big Ten tournament. Izzo, who's had the best team in the Big Ten for the better part of the last decade, he'd only made one Big Ten championship game during that entire span. We're thinking going into this year, Michigan State, just another year. But no, we saw a little bit of a different focus from the Spartans for that Big Ten tournament because they close out the regular season with back-to-back losses, including that crusher against Ohio State in East Lansing on Senior Day. So this is a Michigan State team. They already have that tournament mentality. And we're talking about a head coach with an extraordinary track record in the month of March. Teams don't make six Final Fours. Even the best teams in the country don't make six Final Fours in a 15-year span. That's what Izzo's done at Michigan State. And no way I'll be looking to step in front of the Spartans in this matchup. This is a team playing somewhat on a mission right now. And I'm in no rush to step in front of Sparty Spartan.
Yeah, maybe even a game where we might even lay this a little bit. And the one thing Michigan State will do is they will stay in structure the entire, even if the reserves are on the court, you've got to play Michigan State basketball. If you do that, if you stay in structure for the whole 40 minutes, boy, think of all the points off turnovers, all the points off of offensive rebounds, all the easy transition baskets when Long Island takes a bad shot, Michigan State gets the rebound and gets a run out. Ordinarily, when you're looking at a big underdog, you want to slow the game down a little bit. Here's one where the underdog is going to be feeding the furnace of the favorite. Might even play a little bit of Sparty.
Maybe play a little bit of over there, too, because Michigan State, when they get the chance to open the floor, they've done it very, very well. All right. If you look at KenPom.com, one of the sites that Dave likes to talk about that has really good college basketball statistical numbers, good way to predict point spreads, good way to predict totals, the next two teams, Memphis and St. Louis, should both be in the top 14 teams in the country. But then the NCAA tournament's ultimate wisdom. There's an 8-9 matchup, which means the winner of this game is going to get crushed in round two, or is going to be up against it in round two. Way to get both teams out of the field and let those big revenue teams make the big bucks for the NCAA. Disgusting. I mean, really, of all the seeding issues, this one to me is the most insanely bad one. And that's what we would expect from the NCAA, the worst organization in all of sports. And I say that in deference to the NFL, which we all hate because they don't call it the No Fun League for anything when it comes to management. But really a contrast in style here. Memphis, you know, incredible athletes on that team, a team that's capable of blowing opponents off the floor, a team that has in theory, they can make a long, long run in this tournament. We obviously saw the Tigers make it all the way to the championship game a few years back. In fact, had that championship in their grasp, had they only been able to sink a few free throws. St. Louis, they don't have the athletes that Memphis brings to the table, but they do have a head coach in Rick Majerus who's cobbled together a pretty darn good roster this year, Dave.
You love Majerus in this type of game because he'll slow Memphis down. He'll make them grind. They don't want to do it. They don't like to do it. Problem is, we're still not quite sure where to peg St. Louis. They were a very chic team in the early betting markets, but the markets might have been fooled a little bit. You go back into November, what do? They beat Washington. They beat Boston College. They beat Villanova. They beat Oklahoma. All looked good at the time, but now in retrospect, none of those wins necessarily mean all that much. So the cart got ahead of the horse on St. Louis. When they got into Atlantic 10 play, they were a good team. They weren't a great one. And that's where they are. No NBA players on the St. Louis roster. Memphis has kids that will move on to the NBA. But in a game like this matchup, if you make Memphis play it one shot at a time, if you take them out of the open court, they'll take bad shots. And the reason why we like games like this, if you watch this one closely, keep a little note off to your side. How many bad shots will Memphis take? How many bad shots will St. Louis take? You end up stealing 5 or 6 possessions a game because one team will throw it away or will throw up a clunker that the other team won't. Those 5 or 6 possessions can make up for the athleticism here. Here's a classic type. If you're going to go St. Louis, look at some money line. Because if it's close, they're likely to find a way to scrap and win it. Memphis, end stages of a slow, close game, can get very frustrated.
Yeah, no question about it. And, I mean, the St. Louis team, number 8 in the country in scoring defense, number 11 in the country in turnover margin. Their floor game is really good. But Memphis, you know, we talk about that 7-0 straight up, 7-0 against the spread run down the stretch in Conference USA after losing at home, a big upset at home by the UTEP Miners. But let's not forget, during that 7-game span, Memphis was double-digit favorites in 5 of those games. They all came at home, and exactly 0 of those wins came against NCAA tournament caliber teams.
Now, here's how we could talk a little bit about awkward bracketing. Now, Teddy just told you a little bit about Memphis-St. Louis. Look at their seedings. Look at the line. Now look at Georgetown-Belmont. Look at their seedings. The line's not supposed to be the same, is it? Well, the oddsmakers might have made a mistake on both of them. Last year, one of our biggest first-round bets was against Belmont. The team looks awfully, awfully good during the year. I think, okay, here comes a sleeper. Well, the problem is Belmont likes to run. They need to get out into the open court. I look at their full season numbers, number 5 in the nation in scoring, number 10 in made three-pointers. What did they run into last year in the first round? Wisconsin. They couldn't force them out of their game. Wisconsin slowed it down, methodically beat them by 14. I'm kind of seeing this as the same matchup again. Belmont getting a bad draw. They would like to get out and run. Georgetown won't let them run. They'll sort of frustrate them a little bit. I'm wondering if maybe this 3.5 is a little bit low.
Yeah, on the other hand, Dave, this is a Georgetown team like Vanderbilt that we talked about earlier, like Gonzaga that we talked about earlier, a significant recent history of getting bounced out of this tournament early. Some of it may have to do with Georgetown's unique style of basketball. Some of it may have to do with their inability to execute down the stretch. And, you know, you look at the Cincinnati game in the Big East tournament, a classic example of Georgetown making mistakes when it mattered most. Yeah. It's a senior-laden team. You know, you have Jason Clark, you have Hollis Thompson, you have Henry Sims, you have the great Frosch with Otto Parter. You know, 4 guys at 6'8 or more starting for Georgetown. A big team, a physical team, a team that has NBA-caliber talent. They should destroy a team like Belmont, but they won't. I don't think they will. When we look at Georgetown and their X's and O's execution during crunch time of close games, they get tight. They make mistakes. They turn the ball over. They don't take the same good shots they've been taking throughout the course of the ball game. We've seen defensive breakdowns from the Hoyas. I look at this team as a joke waiting to happen, Dave. And I'm not going to lay anything with Georgetown in the first round.
Meanwhile, we'll have some Hoyas in our pockets because the best individual matchup here, you know, we talked about how good Belmont is from three-point range. Number 10 in the nation for made three-pointers. Georgetown, number 1 in the nation at defending the arc. Teddy talked about that lineup of 4 guys, 6'8 or taller. These are all athletes. And that was the big key. When they at first, they didn't want to have Potter in the starting lineup. He's 6'8. They said, you know what, we'd be a little bit too big. No, they are tall. They are mobile. Number 1 at defending the arc, Belmont needs to be able to score from beyond the arc. Not asking much for Georgetown to win this by 5 or 6 points. Here's a case where the line is far short for where these seed levels would ordinarily be. We're going to take advantage of it.
Let's look at the final matchup in Columbus. NC State minus 2.5 against San Diego State. And, you know, here's Steve Fisher again. You know, you want to talk about a coach A great tournament coach that gets no credit for it. We all know how Fisher's career started. You know, he got Bill Frieder got fired on the eve of the NCAA tournament. Fisher rode Ramil Robinson and Glenn Rice to 6 wins in 6 games and a national championship for the Wolverines. He was back there again 3 years later with a team composed of entirely freshman starters in the Fab Five. And made it back to the championship game again the following year with that same team. People forget about the Elite Eight run that Michigan made the year after Weber got drafted, all under Steve Fisher. Here at San Diego State, same story. Took a program that was nothing when he got here, nothing. Fisher, you know, got forced out. There were some issues, let's say, with the Wolverine program. Arrives in San Diego and builds this program from scratch. Here they are, third straight trip to the NCAA tournament. They reached the Sweet 16 last year. And this isn't a great San Diego State team. This year's team, nowhere near as good as last year's team was, Dave, but they're still dancing, and they're still, according to the betting markets, very live for the first-round matchup against number 11 seed NC State.
They hang around, they compete, they scrap, and that just might be enough here. We're not sure this line is in the right place. NC State was the ACC's version of Iowa State. Team has got good balance, can shoot the ball from perimeter, all five guys can score in double figures. But you get in the final 2 minutes of a close game, can they make a stop? And that really matters at tournament time. You know San Diego State has the mental toughness. They play good defense, and with a minute left, they got kids who are going to go out, they're going to slap the floor, they're going to expect to stop you. The NC State kids, no, they're going to hope that when you make the shot against them, they have enough time to go down and maybe score themselves. I don't like that mental toughness issue. They could have gotten over the hump against North Carolina in the ACC tournament. Probably should have. They got hosed by the officials in that game. But the fact is, they didn't. So I'm not sure if I want to trust them in the latter stages of a close game. This one's just a bump away. A plus three, boy, that would look awfully, awfully good for the pockets. But maybe a little bit of 2.5 is worth taking a piece of.
All right, we're 3/4 of the way home, which means we've still got 8 more games to break down. We're going to head to Nashville when we come back after this brief commercial message.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers. Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee for Friday's matchups. 4 games in Nashville. Let's start. Florida State -6 against St. Bonaventure. Cincinnati -2 over Texas. Temple, no opponent yet, no line yet, obviously. The Temple is going to face the winner of the late game tonight between South Florida and Cal. And, of course, Michigan -6 against Ohio.
You have to start with the focus for the very first game. Both Florida State and St. Bonaventure come off of tourney championships last weekend. So who gets back down to earth the quickest? We think we know the answer to that, certainly from a winner standpoint, but maybe not from a point spread standpoint. If you've clicked on the brackets, you see we got Florida State making a long, long run in this tournament. We love their toughness, love their defense. Here, Kentucky, Florida State, Louisville, the 3 best defensive teams in the country. But this year, Florida State can score. They've got some confident outside shooters. You just wonder how different last year could have been. Remember, in the round of the Sweet 16 last year, they lose by 1 to Virginia Commonwealth in overtime, or they're in the Elite Eight. 8 players who played in that game are still with the Seminoles right now, so maybe they come back with a little bit more of a bounce than a St. Bonaventure team that literally had to win in Atlantic City last week just to be here.
Yeah, I mean, Florida State finishes out the regular season number 5 in field goal percentage defense in the country, number 7 in block shots. And the Bonnies, well, they haven't seen this kind of defense. St. Bonaventure, they've got a superstar. They've got a guy who's going to go in the NBA draft, and Andrew Nicholson, he's a big-time talent, as good as any player in that conference this year. But Nicholson had he feasted on the smaller players in the A-10. Now he's going to run into a tough defensive team that has seen guys as good or better than him on multiple occasions this year. I think it's a tough matchup for St. Bonaventure if Florida State doesn't have their head up their butts and comes in with the proper focus for a team that has the potential, as Dave said, to make an extended run in the big dance this year.
Another team running into a tough matchup may be Texas. We've talked about the Longhorns often on this show. A team that was rebuilding this year, not reloading. They lost more players to early outs than they had anticipated. Had to bring a lot of more freshmen in than they wanted to. 6 freshmen in the rotation. Some of them ordinarily wouldn't be Texas Longhorn type of players. Now only taking 2 against Cincinnati. I think there's a lot of past Texas reputation in this line. They never really did come together this year. Yeah, they stole one in the opening round of the Big 12 against Iowa State that they got through. But that second game of the conference tournament, they were out of the Missouri game 10 minutes through the first half. Midway through, yeah, they're just not going to be in it. Never developed that number 2 scorer to go with Jacob Von Brown. And a defense that wasn't as good as usual without Alex Wanmany, their best defender, inside. Maybe a little bit soft by Texas standards. If you're soft, Cincinnati's not the ideal team to be going up against.
Yeah, no question. I mean, this is a Bearcat squad that was short on depth this season, and we saw that on full display by the time they got to the Big East tournament title game against Louisville, where they were simply gassed. They still went on a run in the second half of that game, made things real interesting, but would they have about 3 or 4 consecutive possessions down 4 against Louisville where they just couldn't make baskets. And that has been a problem on occasion this year for the Bearcats, but again, we're talking about a veteran team. We're talking about a battle-tested team. Look who they've beaten just in their last 7 games. Louisville, Marquette, Georgetown, and Syracuse over a 7-game span. That's pretty impressive. Over a 7-game span, Texas hasn't even come close to reeling off 4 wins like that this season, which speaks volumes about Cincy's A game. Should they bring that A game? The only question is if they have any type of a hangover from what happened at Madison Square Garden last Saturday night. But the fact this game being played on Friday, not Thursday, gives Mick Cronin and company a little bit of extra time to prepare, and I think gives the Bearcats a legitimate edge over a Texas team that's been a little bit overrated for a good portion of the season.
As Teddy mentioned, Temple will get the South Florida-California winner. Now, go back to our Tuesday show when we were breaking the brackets down. We pegged Temple at 100-1. It's a nice value. One of the prime reasons for that, they're a difficult team to prepare for. A lot of veterans out there, 3 senior starters, 2 juniors, just a bounce away last year from the Sweet 16. They lost to San Diego State in overtime in the second round. Tough to prepare for because they're very, very smart offensively. They move the ball and share it well, but it's the defense that gets real tricky. Because they got 4 guys on the perimeter who can switch everything, sometimes it's hard to tell if they're in a man-to-man or in a zone. That's going to be a real headache for the Wednesday night winner, because there's not going to be a lot of time to try to decipher where Temple's coming from, particularly if it's South Florida, a team that just doesn't have much of a half-court offense to begin with. Temple, at the right price point, may be worth a look.
Michigan and Ohio as the nightcap in Nashville. And let's give John Boeheim some credit. You know, he's 8-6 a lifetime in tournament games for Michigan. And this is a team that took Duke. Remember, they took Duke to the wire last year, lost by a bucket against the Blue Devils as big underdogs. And that's been a great role for Boeheim both this year and in seasons past. Michigan plus points. We've talked about it here on Vegas Sports Day. And we certainly put some money in our pockets supporting the Wolverines as a dog in some of these games. Hey, I mean, we saw Boeheim do it with West Virginia when that Pitsnoggle team made it all the way to the Elite Eight. Not always with the most talent, but the execution for the Wolverines is phenomenal. He's got a couple of guys that fit right into that system. We talk about Tim Hardaway and Trey Burke, guys who absolutely fit exactly what Boeheim is trying to do.
Yeah, similar to Temple. This is a difficult team to match up against, but maybe not so much for Ohio. Part of what Michigan does so well is they run those 1-3-1 trapping zone defenses that are awfully, awfully difficult on the first look. But Ohio's got a terrific point guard, 5'11 DJ Cooper, the kind of size where you can dribble through those traps. Talk about a guy with a little bit of tournament moxie. 2 years ago, the freshman played 37 minutes in a 14-point win over Georgetown in the first round of the tournament. So he's got that little bit of moxie going. He's got the confidence. He can wreak some havoc on that Michigan defense. Because, again, now a different role for Michigan. Beilein has been so good at pulling off the upsets in the past, at finding game plans against superior opponents. This time his team is the chalk. And you wonder about that Michigan mentality. Yeah, they can go out and win the game, but Michigan laying points? No, we don't quite see that from the Wolverines yet. Maybe look into the Bobcats a little bit here.
Yeah, I'm kind of disappointed the money's come on Ohio in this one, Dave, because I, too, would have liked 7 with Ohio U. Now it's down to 6. Don't know if I get there at this number, but if we see some Wolverine money between now and tip-off, I will be looking to fade that late money. It's Bobcats or nothing for me. Why don't you give the Omaha line?
Yeah, let's go to Friday in Omaha. Last bracket of the first round. Got Missouri, a 21-point favorite over Norfolk State. Florida, 3.5 over Virginia. Kansas, 14 over Detroit. And a little bit of a shift here. Purdue opened the favorite over St. Mary's. Now the markets have taken a stand. St. Mary's, a 1-point favorite now over Purdue.
Well, let's start with that Missouri-Norfolk State game. And first, Norfolk. You know, this is a team that not many of us have seen so far this season, a team that didn't get a whole lot of hype coming into the campaign. I got to do some research, really find out what this team does well. The answer is not that much. You know, they don't have a starter under 6'5". Oftentimes we talk about these teams that don't have a lot of big guys. Norfolk State doesn't have a lot of little guys, and that's an interesting matchup against a Missouri team that's going to require good ball handling to survive a matchup like this. Well, Norfolk doesn't have that. For the season, an 0.83 assist to turnover ratio, 14.5 turnovers per game. And no, that's not against quality Big 12 competition. That's against much lesser competition for Norfolk. So this team is going to have a hard time staying in front of Missouri on the dribble. They're going to have a hard time getting out on the Tigers' three-point shooters. And when you look at their own issues, Norfolk, number 296 in the country in turnovers, number 246 in turnover margin, number 271 in fouls committed, defensive discipline is going to be an issue for the underdog in this one.
Just a big, sloppy, physical team that won games in their conference because they were taller than their opponents, not because they were better. They were just taller. Best chemistry of any team in the nation this year, Missouri. Not the first time we'll be talking about the Tigers. But now that a full season of games are under their belts, let's take a look at how special these numbers are. Number 6 in scoring, number 4 in field goal percentage, number 8 in free throw percentage, number 11 in assists, number 2 in assist to turnover ratio, number 8 in turnover margin, number 4 for fewest fouls committed. Now match a couple of these up. Fouls committed, number 4 versus number 271. Turnover margin, number 8 versus number 246. And that 246 for Norfolk, that's not against this type of defensive pressure. These steals that Missouri's been getting all year against much better ball handling teams than Norfolk. Boy, this has a chance to be a layup and a dunk fest for Missouri. Probably no way Norfolk can work around that matchup. Is there a fear of Missouri coming in a little flat because they won the Big 12 tournament last weekend? Ordinarily, yes, because remember, that was their last ever appearance in that tournament. But those games were so easy. You know, they played so well. They were so comfortably in hand. It wasn't like there was this emotional crescendo moment. Look for the Missouri players to be right back down on the ground here and pretty good fan support at the venue.
No question. A virtual home game in terms of crowd support for Missouri. Florida and Virginia, it really is an interesting matchup here between two teams that, let's call them underachievers down the stretch. Virginia, 4-6 straight up in their last 10 ball games. And a very similar number, ATS. Florida, four and six straight up, just 3-7 against the number in their last 10. And just 1-4 straight up in their last 5 ball games. So really, the Gators, it wasn't pretty for extended stretches this season for Florida. But no question, in my mind, Billy Donovan's team has the talent to make a run here. The question is whether they can overcome Donovan, perhaps, and hang. I mean, Tony Bennett, and a remarkable coaching job for Virginia. Florida, better talent. That's reflected in this number. Execution-wise, the Cavs could have an edge, though, Dave, couldn't they?
We talked about several teams on the show today that may have already maxed out what they had, that are efficient, play hard, play smart, but there just comes that certain point where you've done what you can do. Southern Miss was one. Notre Dame was one. Now here comes Virginia. Not a lot of talent, but they scrap hard, they play hard. But now you can only develop so far. So Teddy talked about how Florida struggled down the stretch. Now let's look at Virginia. Only 4-6 straight up over their last 10 games. Only so far they could go. Again, they're going to be fundamentally very, very sound. And another one of these matchup games you want to watch for. Florida, number one in the nation in made three-pointers this year. But Virginia, number 11 at defending them, allowing less than 30%. You take a team's strength away, you can be right there in the hunt. Yeah, Virginia can be right in the hunt to win this game. The problem has been finishing. Mike Scott, he'll be in the NBA. He's a good finisher. He's the only one. So when you get in the latter stages of a close game, the teams know they can double-team Scott, make him kick the ball back out. Virginia just doesn't have that second scoring option.
Kansas is another team that's going to have a big home court edge, per se, or big crowd support edge in this particular venue in Omaha. And Kansas, pretty fresh after their early exit in the Big 12 tournament. But this is one instance where the big underdog, the 15 seed, I don't know if they're going to be intimidated by Kansas. Detroit faced a fairly tough non-conference slate. And maybe most important, this is a Detroit team that has the size inside. So many of these games with a 116 or a 215 matchup, there's simply a class difference and a size difference in the paint. This isn't one of them. Detroit's big in the paint. You know, Eli Holman, 6'10". LaMarcus Love, a 6'10". And this is a Detroit team that, again, they didn't have one of their key players, Chase Simon, for a good portion of the season. Once he got into the lineup in January, all of a sudden, boom, the Titans started winning games and covering spreads, something they struggled to do early in the campaign. So that's reflected in this number. Kansas only 14, relatively low compared to some of these other numbers we're going to see in these quote-unquote mismatch games. The question is this really a mismatch game? I don't think that it is, Dave. I think it's competitive.
Yeah, what's going to be fascinating throughout this bracket, when you watch the Kansas game and the Missouri game, is to see how the crowds react. Missouri and Kansas don't like each other, especially now that Missouri's leaving the Big 12 to sort of end that rivalry. Well, those two schools are also going to grab up almost every available ticket. Will Missouri fans be there to just boo Kansas? Yeah, they will.
Yep.
Will Kansas fans be there to boo Missouri? Yeah, they will. So can that give Detroit a little bit of energy? Yes, they can. Like this, Detroit will not be intimidated inside. Not only big kids around the basket, tough kids. You almost say these are Detroit kids around the basket. Eli Holman, he's not going to back down from anybody. Problem is the whistles. And that's that difficulty. When you're in the Horizon League and you're big, and you're not getting challenged all that much, sometimes you have some bad habits, overly aggressive and trying to block some shots. So concerned here that when these big guys have to step up in class, and file this way, this tends to be a common theme in NCAA tournament basketball. Big players from the lower majors tend to get in foul trouble when they step up in class because the bad habits they had over the course of the season get called out pretty early. I just don't know if I want to be laying anything with Kansas here, though. Kansas, again, not like Southern Miss and Notre Dame and Virginia that we talked about, who may have backed off a bit because they got everything they had. Kansas did max itself. I mean, they played every bit as well as we thought they could play. We give Bill Self a lot of credit for getting what he did out of this team, but they may have already reached their peak. Kansas may be a vulnerable team in the early rounds here.
Last game to talk about. We've gone through 31 of the 32 first-round matchups. 32 comes now, and that, of course, St. Mary's and Purdue, and we've seen a switch of favorites in this ballgame. The Boilermakers opened the chalk. Now the Gales are the chalk in this one. And if you liked St. Mary's, the markets may well have already taken the value out of that particular bet for you, unless you've gotten down already. And again, you say, well, what's the difference? Minus one, plus one. If you win the game, you cover the number. Dave, this game, I can tell you right now, if there's one game on Friday that's going to come down to the last possession, this is that game. And plus one, minus one, well, considering the difference between a loss and a push, or a push and a win, or all that sort of thing. Not these two teams are different, but from a power rating perspective, man, it's bet on versus bet on.
Should probably start a new phrase, ATM, or all the moves matter, and think about it that way. Think, oh, no, it only moved this far. No, they all matter. When you lose that little bit of value, you either bet less or you don't bet at all. Now, some of the St. Mary's move also happened when they let in Stephen Holt, practicing well this week. Not only should play, should be right back in the starting lineup. It was actually a good sign for them that they could win their conference tournament without Holt. Not only a good contributor on offense, their best defender on the perimeter. We're not quite sure where to peg Purdue right now. Now, we talked about the issue that when Kelsey Barlow left, that was addition by subtraction. They've played their best basketball without Barlow, we think. Here's the issue with that. They had the luck of the draw down the stretch. They catch Nebraska a couple of times. They catch Penn State. They were able to punch out the weaker teams in the Big Ten. But does that mean they're necessarily ready to step up and win a game against this class of competition? No, if the early St. Mary's line had held up, were able to take a little bit, we would have been there. At this price point, no, not enough left.
Well, it's play of the day time, Dave. We've gone through a play for Wednesday. We gave you St. Joe's minus the 6 in NIT action tonight. We've gone through a play for Thursday. Used Montana plus 9.5 against Wisconsin. Vegas Sports Day play of the day for Friday. We're going to do something I don't think we've ever done before. In fact, I'm convinced we haven't done it before. This is the biggest chalk we've laid on this show since its inception. But the time is right. The opponent is right. Dave, why don't you tell them about it?
Let's go back to that Missouri matchup against Norfolk State. Matchup just all wrong for Norfolk in this one. You're talking about maybe the best pressure defense in the country against a team that doesn't handle the ball well. A big team without quickness, having to guard small, quick perimeter players. Yeah, we don't worry about Missouri being overly confident here because they just play with such precision. Remember those assist to turnover counts that they have? They're so smart. This group plays with so much chemistry. We look for them to turn this into a wipeout, and as so often happens, in the latter stages of a blowout, Norfolk State's not fighting their way back into the game. They're giving the bench and other guys a chance to get into a tournament setting. Missouri minus the 21, that'll get you the money on Friday.
And that's going to wrap it up for the double edition Vegas Sports Day NCAA Tournament Preview Show. Whew, that's a mouthful. Reminder, we're dark tomorrow, no show on Thursday, but we will be back on Friday, give you a quick look ahead for the weekend. Of course, break down all the NBA, all the news and notes from those Thursday games. From Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the madness. We'll see you in 48 hours.